Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, Legacy Stables offers yoga with minis, Bank of America's President Paul Kiefer stops by to talk about the bank's overall growth strategy in West Michigan, we talk about a ride to raise funds and awareness for multiple system atrophy, the Ladies Literary Club is under reactivation, we get the details, and Julian Haddam heads to Schuler Books tomorrow for a signing.
The only bear with us offering yoga with the minis is Legacy Stables. So we ask for a conversation as early as 7 a.m. You want me hanging out with your minis? Good morning to you, Leonie.
Good morning, Shelley.
So remind us what a mini is.
Yeah, our miniature horses. We have a couple of miniature horses here at Legacy Stables. Our main resident, Peanut and Wally, and then a couple of ponies as well, Snoopy, Flurry, and all those guys like to come hang out while you do yoga.
That is so cool. How does this idea come to be?
Well, we were thinking we've got such a beautiful, serene location here in Caledonia, Michigan, and, goat yoga has become so popular, and we thought, well, why can't we do that with our miniature horses? Obviously, they're not going to be jumping on your backs or anything like that, but to have them graze peacefully next to you while you're doing yoga in our horse pasture is just something that was really intriguing, and it turns out to be amazing.
Legacy Stables, give me your 101, please.
Yeah, so we are just south of the airport on Patterson in Caledonia, right close to M6 there, and we're a facility with 34 horses, all sizes, not just miniatures, but we offer all sorts of things and really just want to connect people to horses, especially those that wouldn't otherwise have the chance or may not be able to afford to own their own horse. And so this is just one way we can give back to the community and get people connected and out in nature. And it's a lot of fun.
It's been there. We've aired many an interview. I've done some vaulting and more. Back to yoga with minis. So when are the opportunities available?
So right now we have a Tuesday morning session from 7 to 8. We're hopefully actually even looking into adding maybe an evening session. But otherwise, we have once a month on Sundays from 8 to 9. And so that is kind of what we're launching with. And everyone really seems to love it. And you can sign up for like a weekly class where you commit for like maybe 5 sessions out of the ones that we have in the summer. Or you can just drop in as you want to.
And I guess when I think about doing yoga, do I bring the mat? Do I wear the comfortable clothes?
Yeah, so you definitely don't need any experience. We have licensed yoga instructors, and they do have a mat if you need it. But otherwise, bring your mat, bring a water bottle, and yeah, wear comfy clothes. You can keep your shoes on or take them off. And we're in a nice, even, grassy area. So it is outside. We have a contingency plan if there is rain, but otherwise it's outside and just out with nature.
Wonderful. And does that contingency plan mean that yoga will still happen?
Yes. Yep. So we have two large indoor arenas, and so the minis get to be out romping around in our arena, which they love to do. It's really fun to watch. So they're a little bit separated in that case. You won't be in the same area with them. They'll be right next to you, but enclosed by a gate.
And I know I always ask you this question, but what is it about the horse that draws one either to yoga or hanging out or watching them run and more, Leonie?
It's kind of a mystery. I don't know if there's something I can really put my finger on, but there is definitely something about their big, big eyes and just their slow breathing. When they're grazing next to you, the sound of them just munching away is just so cathartic. And they just accept you for who you are. They're just there to be with you and enjoy the space with you. It's just wonderful.
So on behalf of Legacy Stables and Karen's Horse Connection, that's you, Leonie Bayer. Details one more time on yoga with minis, please.
Yes, thank you. So 1 hour with our licensed instructors, either Tuesday mornings from 7 to 8 or once a month on Sundays from 8 to 9. You can find those details on our website at legacyhorses.com or shoot us an email at office@legacyhorses.com. We'd be happy to connect you.
Nice. Say hi to Peanut and the rest of your good group.
Will do. Thanks so much, Shelley.
Paul Kiefer, Bank of America, your home away from home. This is kind of your week, too. Anything with the name America in your title, right?
Yeah, it's helpful to have that name this week.
Yes. All right, let's go with a conversation, an in-depth conversation I'd like to have with you. Bank of America West Michigan President Paul Kiefer in studio. You are expanding when many banks are taking away. What's your elevator pitch with Bank of America?
Yeah, so we are excited to be investing more in the region. We just opened a brand new financial center out in Knapp's Corner, right over on the Beltline there. Really nice facility, brand new, just a beautiful place for our team and our customers to do some business out there.
You obviously are a national branch. What makes West Michigan strong?
Yeah, so with West Michigan, we're really looking at the growth of the region. It's one of the few places, especially in the Midwest, where it's not only growing in total, but it's also getting younger. So we're starting to see more millennials, more Gen Z decide to call West Michigan home.
Let's stay with the younger. What do they need from their bank these days?
Yeah, so for the younger generation, it's about how we start the path to meet our life priorities, right? If we think about starting a business, buying their first home, saving for college for their own kids, it's a conversation that has to start younger and younger. The more we can get in front of folks who are still in college or folks who are still in late high school, we're able to help them build the right habits to get on that pathway early.
What do you have for seniors?
Yeah, so we have a whole wide range of products that can kind of meet people at every stage of life and every stage of wealth. So whether you're just starting out or whether you're approaching retirement or currently in retirement, right, you have different sets of products. You have advice and guidance that can kind of match your journey the whole way along.
Tell me a little bit about you, Paul.
Yeah, so I grew up here in West Michigan. So I'm from Holland originally. And, my career started about 16 years ago. I've been all around the country with the company, a lot of different roles. And then when my wife and I had kids, we decided to relocate back to West Michigan, raise the boys where we grew up.
Have you been with Bank of America most of your career?
Yeah. So I came out of Michigan State, spent a brief time in retail, and then went over to Bank of America in 2010.
How about that? Sustainability. Appreciate that. How do you know when it's time to open a branch, say, in Knapp's Corner? What's the behind the scenes here?
So it's a very exciting process. We try to find the right mixture of where clients live, where they work, and where they shop, right? And so if you think of the Beltline, you've got all the major employers kind of up and down the Beltline there. You have all that retail that's gone in over the course of the last 4 or 5 years over by that Knapp's Corner area. And then you have a lot of housing. You've got the apartment complexes there. You've got all the neighborhoods behind there. So it really is sort of the sweet spot. If you go too close into residential, you run the risk of, hey, folks are at work during the day, right? And that's when our financial centers are open. If you go too close to commercial, they don't feel like it's part of their community. So you have to find that kind of right mix where it's right in that right location.
There is a behind-the-scenes story. Where are you in opening?
So we did our soft opening in April, and then we did our grand opening about 2 weeks ago. We welcomed in Holly O'Neill, who's the president of our consumer bank across the country, and Wyatt Smith, who's our senior managing director of global commercial banking. So we really wanted to show that it's not just a place for, just for consumer traffic, right? Our large businesses in the area, our family-owned businesses, can really benefit from having that presence in the local community.
And I know you and yours have had presence in our community. Tell me about why community involvement is important.
Yeah, so we look at it as any investment in the community, especially here in West Michigan, is only going to help grow the overall economy. Better economy leads to more prosperous clients. More prosperous clients need more services from the bank here. So we just had a wonderful event with a bunch of kids from the Boys and Girls Club. So this was last week. We actually got Kirk Cousins to come in. So I'm a Holland boy. I went to Michigan State. It was real exciting for me. And we took him out to Kent Country Club because we know that a lot of kids don't have access to golf, right? And it's a great sport. It's something you can play your whole life. And it's something that's really great for a business career. So we said, let's get a bunch of kids who have never touched a golf club before, get them out to a wonderful space in Kent Country Club. And then, it was extra exciting to have Kirk there to interact with the kids and help them fall in love with the game.
Biggest kid involved, Paul Kiefer, that's for sure. So do you do the typical banking hours, Bank of America, especially your Knapp's Corner?
Yeah, so we're primarily open, during the daytime. And we also do have Saturday coverage as well. But for most of our clients, for their transactional needs, they're seeing us online, right, in our digital space. Especially during COVID, everybody kind of learned how to do everything on their phone. And so mostly when they're coming into our financial centers, it's for advice and guidance. It's for a big life priority, a big life event that just happened that they need to go and sit and talk to somebody about, what their next step looks like.
Yes. Bank of America, West Michigan. It's president with us, Paul Kiefer, opening a new branch, Knapp's Corner. So there we are. Paul, as we're talking, obviously I do a little multitasking in addition to talking, but here's a headline. Bank of America CEO on the economy, affordability, and the big worry about AI. Are you worried about AI?
You know, I don't think I'm worried about it. I'm excited about it, right? I think obviously there's been a lot of movement over the last couple of years that's been a little bit off-putting for folks. But when I think about what it can do for education, what it can do to make somebody's life easier, what it can make somebody to be more productive at work, and take away all the parts of the working environment that might be repetitive and help people really focus on what they're passionate about, I think there's a really great future there. It's just going to take some time to get there.
So what else do you need from the community?
You know, I would just love for folks to understand that we're here, we're present, we're in the local community, and come visit us, not just at our new center in Knapp's Corner, but we've got five other centers in the area all across, you know, from Granville to Wyoming, you know, and in the southern part of the city as well. So come visit us. You know, come see how financial centers have changed over time. It's not, if you haven't been in a bank branch in, you know, 5 or 10 years, it's wildly different than what you remember. So come see us.
It's not your grandma's bank anymore.
That is true.
Supposed to say. All right, and then how do I best make the best use of my money these days?
So I would say you want to make sure that you're tying what you're spending to what is important to you, right? So really sit down, have that conversation with your family about what your priorities are. If your priority is buying a home, make sure that your spending and your saving reflects that. A lot of folks just try to follow sort of a cookie cutter plan, but you really need to root it in what's important to you, because that's going to give you that motivation to really meet those goals.
Wonderful. Give out candy or anything when I walk in?
You know, that's a branch by branch decision. So, but I'm sure a lot of our teams out there have a lot of fun stuff when our customers walk in.
Here we are. Paul Kiefer, how do we find out more about Bank of America in our own backyard?
Absolutely. So I would either go online to bankofamerica.com. We have a lot of great resources there for clients and for business owners, or just stop in and see us, right? We are all across the city, and we're always happy to welcome folks in.
Ask for Paul. There you are.
Absolutely.
All right. Congratulations on adding a new branch.
Yes. Thanks, Shelley. Great to see you again.
Let's talk about the ride to raise funds and awareness for multiple system atrophy. We talk about an August event because we need you to sign up now. Grace Heisinger in the house. Grace, good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Jack Whalen, hello to you.
Good morning, Shelley.
All donations going to Mission MSA. Let's get into some storytelling. Jack, why is multiple system atrophy important to you?
Because I have it. I began having symptoms back late in 2024, first saw my physician in the spring of 2025. MSA progresses quite rapidly in typical cases. Today I'm in a wheelchair. I've been there for a couple of months and living in assisted living.
Yes, and yet you know the importance of getting the word out, raising funds and more, and living as functional a life as possible, sharing with others. Is this, I don't know if using the word rare is important, but is this, we know of Parkinson's, we know of ALS. Do we know of multiple system atrophy?
Using the word rare is important. It is quite uncommon. The books say 3 to 4 patients per 100,000 population, which means in the metropolitan Grand Rapids area, perhaps a dozen patients with it. The trouble with that is that it's hard to do good clinical studies and trials and find treatments when there's so few patients with that. Most of the studies that have done on Parkinson's, for instance, or Alzheimer's have hundreds of patients. Most of those done on MSA have perhaps a dozen patients.
Hence, one of our reasons to discuss and to ride. Grace, what is your angle here?
I'm Jack's partner. And so from the standpoint of care provider and family, I've experienced the challenges also that he's going through. So for this ride, I'm in charge of the volunteers, which for most of these rides, it doesn't go forward unless we have lots of volunteers and community support to drive the event forward.
Tell me about staying with you, Grace, the Grand River Ride to End MSA.
Yeah, so this ride is really exciting. It's the first year for it. We have people that know a lot about rides like this, and they're pulling it together. As a matter of fact, this group is who Jack used to ride with in high school and college. So they're connected and they're invested. They also have done a fabulous job on the website. The website is GRREMSA, gremsa.org. You can check that out and find out more information. But the ride does involve a family ride and also a 34-mile ride, a metric century, which is a 62-mile ride, and then a century ride, which is 100 miles. So those are the distances.
Choose your weapon. Remind me of your affinity to cycling, Jack.
Oh, I used to ride a lot. On a good year, I'd ride 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year. Mm-hmm. For the past year, I haven't been able to ride at all, of course.
Yes. And that is because, I mean, there are adaptive cycles. I'll just go there.
There are that. There's kind of workarounds to help with that. My particular symptoms have to do with balance, which then makes even for adaptive cycles somewhat difficult. The trouble for an old man like me is lifting up on those heavy adaptive cycles, getting it into your car or getting into a bike rack.
The reality, and yet you are here to inspire others. Is your goal to raise funds, but also to raise awareness of the disease in the West Michigan community, Jack?
Of course, yes. As I said, it is an uncommon disease. A lot of people are unaware of it. And the more people that are aware, the more early diagnosis can happen.
This is Saturday, August 29th. I'm not going to say it'll be here before we know it, but you know it will. How does it work when it comes to registering and fundraising, Grace?
Yeah, so the way the ride is set up, again, the website is your key place to go to for all that information. There is a registration cost. $25 if you're less than 16 years old, and $50 if you're over 16. And we're also encouraging people requiring actually $150 in donations for each rider. If they can raise that, it'll make a huge difference in terms of what we can donate and the difference it'll make through Mission MSA.
Yes. What else do we have to say on that, Jack?
Mission MSA is a national organization based in Chicago. That helps those that are diagnosed. It's a clearinghouse for information and for distributing funds for research for MSA.
Yes. Grace, tell me about the need for volunteers.
Okay, yes. As usual, there are always a need for volunteers. We have a good number so far, but on the website you can click and you can support the riders at any one of the parks or the sites. We also have a registration table, and it's also going to be such a fun event, right? We're going to have food and all kinds of snacks and a celebration afterward with entertainment. And for each of those to go smoothly, we like to have a nice, healthy supply of volunteers as well as parking and all those parts. But it's going to be a really fun event. It's going to be enjoyable to both engage in and be a rider as well as volunteer.
And it's not a race, right, Jack?
It is not a race.
Yes. This begins and ends at the beautiful Ada Park on Buttrick?
That's correct.
Yes. And, I don't want to say what else. Yes, coffee, donuts. Are there stops along the way?
Yes.
Yes.
There are stops along the way. A couple of them, again, you can get the clear picture from the website, but Chief Hazy Cloud Park. So part of it, yeah, I love that park. So part of that's in Ada. We start and end at Ada Park, of course. And then depending on the length of the ride, it's Coldwater River Park. And then actually the Century Ride goes all the way to Hastings and then comes back. So it's that particular area. A lot of people have been in that area. So if you've ridden in that area before, just join us for this very special ride.
And Jack, remind me of the importance of helmets that are required.
Helmets are required.
Yes, that's all you need. That's all we need to say on that.
That's all one needs.
I have a little problem when I see my fellow cyclists without their helmets on the Kent County Trail, but I digress on that. How will your life continue to be as functional as possible, Jack?
Well, it's going to go downhill. There's no question about that. because there is no cure. There's some treatments that sometimes kind of help slow MSA, but nothing that fixes it, nothing that cures it. And that's part of the hope with raising money for that. So people with MSA do a lot of physical therapy, and really that's about the gist of it. The medicines that work well for Parkinson's, brand name is Cinemid, L-DOPA is the generic, works well for Parkinson's in most cases. In most cases, does nothing much for MSA. So there's not a medication that works for MSA. Physical therapy is what helps.
Yes, keeping you moving as much as possible, again, functionally. Are there support groups, or if one is newly diagnosed, how does he or she reach out, Jack?
There's a couple of movement disorder specialty offices in Grand Rapids. We're lucky with that. Trinity has one, as does Corwell Health. And they have social workers and therapists and support groups there, part of their program.
Grace, how do you, back to our August 29th, because funds are needed, awareness is needed. These rides are powerful. I mean, everyone wears their jerseys, and I can certainly ride as a single person without a team.
And any experience level. We've also focused on the family ride, so that builds family. And just a community event, right? It builds energy. It builds connection. And it's just so important to have that. And the awareness is big. As Jack said, this is a rare disease. But it's also one that we've got a skin test now that helps with some of the diagnostic piece of it. And so maybe we'll see more coming around. And it's just important for people to be aware of it. And there's nothing better than a ride and community connections to build that.
Yes. All right. So final word from you, Grace. Volunteers are needed. We're August 29th, so still some time, but nice to catch me when I have an open schedule. What else is your call?
Yes. So for there's a number of different times for the volunteering. It is a couple hours. I think I've got it on 2 to 3 hours, so it's not a full day expectation, but you're welcome to spend the full day. The first ride starts at 7:30, and of course that's the Century ride, and then there's staggered starts throughout the day to fit people's schedule in terms of signing up for volunteers. And again, it's just the focus. We've got cool colors, purple and like lime green, and the t-shirts are awesome. So come on down and just enjoy the time with us.
What do you leave us with, Jack Whalen?
This is my greatest fear realized, to catch a fatal disease with a dumb name. I'm going to get up to heaven, and my parents and my family's going to laugh at me and said, get a cool name, get plague, get Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. No, multiple system atrophy.
You know what? Humor goes a long way. But take your time in getting the end game done, as we all will one day. All right. I trust you both will be there and probably saying go at 7:30 and go at 8:30.
Oh, absolutely.
That's right.
One more time, best website is?
The website is GRREMSA.org. So GREMSA.
Rolls right off the tongue.
It does, as it should, as does multiple system atrophy. Thank you all for this conversation and the opportunity to get involved August 29th. Take care.
Thank you for having us, Joe.
The Ladies Literary Club is under reactivation. Heather Monroe, we'll call you president, CEO, executive director, grand poobah. You're here to talk about the vision for the Restored Club, its programming, how the community has responded to this great return and needs to. Been there on that stage a couple of times. I'm so glad that there is hope. Good morning to you, Heather.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes. What brought you to, what was your first touch base with Ladies Literary Club?
It started with a conversation with just a random person, Al. We started discussing psychology, and it was a really good conversation. And I kind of inquired why they were, talking to me so in depth about it. And they said they were part of a book club, and they had two rules: no fiction, no self-help. And I thought that was a lovely premise to go away, to study, and come together and discuss it. So I inquired how I could join. And I was told, third rule, no women. And it sent me on a journey to find a comparable club for women. I thought, okay, that's, you know, to each his own.
That's a whole other conversation.
That is a whole other conversation. Yes. But I think it's a beautiful, you know, lead into the Ladies Literary Club. So I went looking for a comparable book club, and the only thing that I could really find was the Ladies Literary Club, and it didn't exist anymore. And so I endeavored with a couple friends to, you know, start our own, and it really just has a life of its own. It's taken us, I didn't know what we were, you know, starting, and here we are, understanding that we are, have the honor to hopefully steward the ladies back to life.
Because that has rich history, that whole club up on Sheldon, correct?
Correct.
Yes. No need to look too far back, but there is a reason to, as the website says, save the Ladies Literary Club of Grand Rapids. And let's just get this out of the way. You're going to be open to all?
Yes.
Yes. Not just ladies.
Correct.
Yes. I just was going there. So you say, I need to get involved. I need to be on a mission to save the Ladies Literary Club of Grand Rapids. How's that going to happen?
Right now we have launched a GoFundMe. Our landing page on our website has a link, and the community support so far has been amazing. We're raising money so that we can enter into a land contract with the current building owners.
Yes, because it was not open, and then it opened. Because again, I'd say in the last 10 years, I've been there for a couple of events. I think even within the last year, there
yes.
have been. But then now there is a new need.
Correct,
and that's why you come forward.
Yes. You were right. It was open. It was a bit of a like concert venue for shortly. And then that didn't work out, and the building is empty and waiting for the ladies.
And again, there's a beautiful shot of the history. Do you have an idea of the history itself?
Yeah, I do a little bit. Yeah. You know, the women came together in 1869, I believe, at a time when women really didn't have formal opportunities for education, and they began to study together, and it was so popular and a beautiful, you know, community that they ended up being able to create their own space, their own building. They built it. It was their crowning jewel, and it was strong for, I think, 146 years before it dissolved in 2015. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful venue. It's not, you know, not just literature. It's a cultural center, really, and that's really what they ended up doing with it. They turned, you know, literature into a gateway to all the arts through that building.
What is your dream, Kevin?
I want to revive it to exactly that. I want it to be a cultural center. I want it to, you know, have author talks. I wanted to have lectures, art exhibitions, concerts, a vibrant cultural center.
Yes. Do you, we don't need to talk specific dollars, but are you looking to meet a minimum? Because do you need restoration? It seems to me you're probably ready to hit the ground running once the doors open.
Yes, we're very fortunate. The building changed hands a couple times, and each time it was renovated with love. And so it's, you know, it's in good repair and ready to be used.
Are there any ghosts in the building?
I have heard rumors.
Okay, and that's okay, because everybody needs a friend to talk to.
That's
an
right.
imaginary friend. There we are. I just went there because I think St. Cecilia has its share, Grand Rapids Civic Theater, just because that's the history.
Absolutely, yeah, and I don't think I will mind those ghosts.
No, there you are. Don't scare away your people, but Heather Monroe with us again, talking about a new vision for the restored club, the Ladies Literary Club. And I know all is well, you're waiting for the community to support. Is it important to keep the name?
Yes, absolutely. I think the continuity for the history is very important. I think the origin being for women educating, coming together, and even at the time they weren't being exclusive, but I think that it's important to maintain as much of the history intact as possible.
course, you are on a fundraising mission, and thank goodness GoFundMe often comes to fruition. Even a $5 or a $10 pledge certainly will work. What once you meet your goal, Heather, how will then you invite the community? What is that vision like?
When we meet our goal, then we have access to the building and we will begin to implement programming. Right now, we have a membership waiting list that's pretty large. We have lots of different book clubs that are reaching out. I think that that is where it's going to kind of start. But I already have people coming to me and asking about showing films, putting on art exhibitions, lectures. I can't say yes to anything until we get there, but we'll hit the road running.
And of course, once that's happening, you'll continue to, nothing's free. So obviously the community will continue to support what they need. And I know you're right down the street from Grandma and the other, many other cultural opportunities. You've got the New Bamboo in that whole area. So the Ladies Literary Club deserves the next chapter, as they say. Do you need more men and women to serve on a reaching out committee or other ways that we can help?
Yes, absolutely. We'd love volunteers. We would just love any participation. It's a community center in ways, and that, that's what we want. I want to hear from everybody, and if you have an idea, you have a part you want to play, reach out.
There's nothing like being a charter member of something that is going to be big, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yes. Charter membership has its privileges. So hopefully next July 4th, there'll be flags a-waving, and that will be a fun stop as we, and that's kind of exciting to think about.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Heather Monroe, what else do you need?
Community support, and just for everyone to know about it. I think that the ladies got forgotten, and we want to remind everyone that they're still here.
Ladies Literary Club, ready to reactivate, needing the community's help. Heather Monroe, how do we make that happen?
You can go to our website, ladiesliterary.org. Our landing page has a link to our GoFundMe, and then there is a membership wait list and a little bit about us. So you can contact us, you can reach out to me, and you can help support us.
Wonderful. All right, looking forward to talking to you next July 4th week. How's that?
Absolutely.
And before. Heather, thank you. Looking forward to this next conversation. Hopefully you have a free evening tomorrow, 6:30, a good way to take a break from certainly our weather. You wanted summer, it's here. On the line, let's talk to you, Julian Haddam. You're signing your book at Schuller Books, of course, here in West Michigan, Shelter from the Storm, How Climate Change is Creating a New Era of Migration. Good morning to you, Julian.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I'm a longtime journalist. I live in Washington, D.C. now. I have some roots here in West Michigan, and I'm in town now giving a talk tomorrow, 6:30 at Schuller Books on 28th Street in Grand Rapids about my book. You just mentioned it is hot here these days, and the book is about climate change and particularly how climate change and extreme weather is making and compelling people to move. It's increasingly clear that climate change and environmental issues more generally are one of the reasons why people move from place to place. Human beings have always been a migratory species. We always move around, whether permanently or just, for vacation, for tourism. And now climate change is one factor there. We talk about the extreme weather. If you're a tourist, it's hard to, it's hard to be a tourist in 100-degree heat. It's also hard to be a tourist if there's hurricanes and wildfires and other stuff like that. And if you're living in a place that is affected by wildfires, hurricanes, also slower level issues like sea level rise, drought, that can also affect how and where people move. And so my book is a compilation of individual stories from parts of the U.S., from Central America, from South Asia, all around the world, really, combining that with some of the broader trends in how and why people are moving in the climate change era.
Yes, I guess I'll ask a silly question. Where do I live where I'm not affected by climate change?
Not a silly question. And actually, the good answer is, everyone is affected by climate change, but Michigan and West Michigan in particular has been referred to as a bit of a climate haven because there's a large supply of fresh water. Yes, it gets hot, but the weather is much more temperate here than it is in other parts of the country. You don't get the droughts and other extreme weather, hurricanes, wildfires, things like that. And so there is some analysis that West Michigan in general and West Michigan kind of in particular are going to be seeing some new people coming because of its relatively attractive weather. Anecdotally, I know that I know folks from the West Coast, from California, from down south who've, faced the hurricanes and extreme storms, and they want to go someplace that's a little bit cooler, that's a little bit more predictable, that you don't have to evacuate your house because of a wildfire every now and then. And Michigan is one of those places that has been held up as a potential climate haven for the future. I don't want to be alarmist, there's no reason to think that you're going to wake up next morning and 20 million people are going to move in next door or anything like that. But the point is that, cities and states grow and change in population all of the time. And climate change is one of those factors now into why people go or don't go into to where they're going.
Again, Julian Haddam with us. You'll hear his words tomorrow night, 6:30, Schuller Books. Tell me, Julian, Shelter from the Storm, How Climate Change is Creating a New Era of Migration. We mentioned Michigan, but do some people actually look at an international move to go again where the weather is better?
To some degree. A large part of my book was looking at situations in other countries. And it is true that other countries are probably going to be more affected by climate change, especially parts of like Asia and Africa, where there is less money to invest in things like air conditioning, which can seem kind of simple, but is really necessary when it gets to over 100 with the feels like temperature. But also, seawalls and good infrastructure that can be resilient against hurricanes. Stuff like that is harder to come by in other parts of the world. And so those are the places where there is going to be more movement in response to this climate change. But most of that is going to be within the same country. Some people will go internationally, but for the most part, people like to stay in their country. It's also a lot easier to stay in their country. You speak the language, probably you know how the systems work. It's easier if you live in the U.S. to move from Michigan to Tennessee or whatever than it is to go from Michigan to Norway. I don't speak Norwegian. I don't know how to pay taxes in Norway. And you have to get a visa. There's a lot of complicated things involved in moving internationally, which is why most people in general, but especially in the climate change era, move within their own country. One of the big exceptions to that is some really small islands in the Pacific. I'm talking places like Kiribati, Tuvalu. These are really, really very small islands. Some cases just a couple of football fields long. They're very low-lying. And so as sea levels rise, these are the places where there's just kind of nowhere else to go in these strings of islands. For better or for worse, not a lot of people live there. These populations of these countries are in the thousands, nowhere like the U.S. or anything like that. They're very small countries. But for those people, it can be a real existential challenge of what do you do as the sea level rises and comes to lap at the front door of your home, in some cases quite literally. So that's kind of the real clear exception. Otherwise, the vast majority of movement in general, and especially in climate change, or in response to climate change, is happening within their own country.
Yes. Julian, congratulations. It's a literary hub, most anticipated book. And yet you I mean, it's blunt. An urgent wake-up call about the coming large-scale human displacement caused by climate change. Mere decades from now, millions of people all over the world will be forced to move because of climate change, you say?
Yeah, so in this, you know, this is not just me. There is an estimate from the World Bank, but very reputable, that by 2050, as many as 216 million people around the world could be forced to move within their own countries. And some of, I mean, this is not just a future concern. This is already happening. Every year, millions of people are evacuated, forced out of their homes because of natural disasters. Not, you know, not always the direct result of climate change, but often the direct result of climate change. And it's clear that disasters are forcing people from their home. Last year, something like 30 million people were evacuated, forced out of their home worldwide because of natural disasters. A lot of those people went back home, but, you know, not all of them did. I grew up in Arizona personally, and wildfires were a common occurrence. I know have friends who live in Southern California who were affected by the Eaton and Palisades fires just a little over a year ago outside of Los Angeles. You might remember those. A lot of people who were living in areas affected by those wildfires still haven't returned. And so this is a current thing. And some of those people may move a couple miles away. Some of them may move to the next town over. Some of them may say, okay, well, this is a good push to get me to, you know, I've always wanted to go to Michigan to be with my family or, you know, the other side of the country for whatever reason. And sometimes a disaster like that can be just a little push. Although also at the same time, not everyone is able to move. Moving is, as anyone who has ever moved knows, moving is expensive. It's a real pain. You have to get all your stuff together and it's a lot of logistics and it's difficult. And that's even just within the same country. And so a lot of people are in this very unfortunate position where they are not able to move, even as a wildfire comes or a hurricane comes. I am of an age where Hurricane Katrina was kind of imprinted on my memory. And I remember during that disaster, a lot of the people who were most severely affected who died were tended to be poorer, tended to be older, and that they did not have the resources, the abilities to evacuate when the government said that they should. And so there is this issue, too, that even as many people are being forced out of their homes because of disasters and the ramifications of climate change, there are also some people who probably should be able to leave their homes and are stuck there. And so that's another angle to this difficult situation.
Yes, your passion is evident. Lastly, how do you picture tomorrow night? I trust a question answer, a little book reading, and more conversation at Schuler Books?
Absolutely, yeah. Schuler Books, 6:30 tomorrow at 28th Street in Grand Rapids. I'm going to give a little talk, you know, expanding on some of the things we just talked about here. Can read a section. Would love to have people come out, do some Q&A. I'd love to, you know, discuss more as much as I can. Would love to see anyone there.
Imagine some of the Haddam family will be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful. All right. How do we find out more about your work, specifically when it comes to shelter from the storm, Julian?
So the book is available now on bookstores everywhere. You know, I always say to support your local bookstore, support your local library, also available on Amazon or wherever else you get it. Shelter from the Storm, How Climate Change is Creating a New Era of Migration. It's on bookshelves now, available for purchase.
Thanks for your time. Welcome to West Michigan. Take care to you, Julian. All about Haddam, all about shelter from the storm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Shelley Irwin, your inspiration for the day. According to Norton Juster, so many things are possible just as long as you don't know they're impossible. Think on that. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.